So let's turn our attention to a closer neighbour, a place where many of us had high hopes in relation to matters democratic, but too much to wish for, it would seem, as Beijing's insisting on having their way in that tiny country's forthcoming elections. Plans for Hong Kong's election of its own chief executive by its mere 7 million inhabitants was a promise Beijing made back in 1997 when I was attending that famous handover. And we were all sorts of trouble and strife have now erupted in the past few months involving a mix of pro-democracy advocates. And to clarify what was promised and what's been delivered, I welcome Dr. John Lee from the Department of Government and International Relations at Sydney Uni, and on Skype from Hong Kong, Professor Joseph Cheng from City University. And Joseph is also convener of the Alliance for True Democracy. John, let's give this some political context. I well recall that interesting phrase, one country, two systems. That was the promise. What was it meant to deliver?
Well, this was the promise that the British and the Chinese hatched together prior to the handover in 1997. And the promise was that China would maintain the Hong Kong system way of life for the next 50 years, so until 2047. Now, what that meant, obviously it all's up for interpretation. Part of the problem is that it's the People's Republic of China's legal right, if you like, and also capacity to reinterpret what the way of life for the Hong Kong people means. So, yes, there will be one person, one vote in 2017, but there won't be democracy as such.
Now, all matters except foreign policy and military defence were ceded or to be decided by the Hong Kong government. That's correct, isn't it?
That's correct, but the People's Republic of China was still given the capacity, as far as China's concerned anyway, to interpret the basic law or the constitution, and the way that they've interpreted the procedures for coming up with the election 2017 is in a way that essentially gets them the candidate that they want.
I can well remember the paradox of Hong Kong with its seething vitality, its free trade, then in contrast with mainland China. But of course these days mainland China is more like one huge Hong Kong in terms of trade, but political rights seem to be increasingly suppressed in Hong Kong.
Well, the aim of the mainland China was that as China grew richer and as Hong Kong became the gateway into China and as the two economies became intertwined and all that's happened, but the hope of China was that as that happened, the Hong Kong people would increasingly look to China as their own country. Now, actually, the reverse has happened. If you look at all of the polls that have been conducted, less than 20% of the people in Hong Kong consider themselves Chinese. 80% of people consider themselves Hong Kong, the Hong Kong people. So, you know, the Chinese have a very narrow view of human beings sometimes. They tend to think that the heart will tend to go where the money is. Well, in the case of Hong Kong, that hasn't occurred.
Okay, let's now go to Hong Kong and talk to Joseph Cheng as convener of the Alliance for True Democracy. Joseph, you've been involved in pro-democracy matters for 30 years. Now, I understand that whilst many are protesting in the streets, what you've been doing is meeting endlessly with Chinese officials to try and the slow drip method.
Well, we have been trying hard to persuade the Chinese authorities that democracy for Hong Kong is actually something good for all parties concerned. We have been trying to say that at this stage, without a democratic electoral system, the government in Hong Kong will not be seen to be legitimate by the people, and therefore it will find it extremely difficult to realize effective governance. At the same time, we try to tell Beijing that you have been trying very hard to win over Taiwan, and if under the one country, two systems model, you don't even allow Hong Kong people to enjoy basic democracy, how can your Taiwan policy be credible and persuasive. And certainly we also raised the issue of the Chinese leadership's image as a reformer domestically and internationally.
You must be an enormously patient fellow in that you sit down, you present ideas for reform via peaceful nonviolence, but you don't get a lot of response.
Yes, we realize the difficulties. If you ask Hong Kong people, the bulk of the population will say, yes, we want democracy. Public opinion surveys in the past 20, 30 years have consistently reflected that up to 70% or a bit more of the people in Hong Kong want democracy. But at the same time, we have to appreciate that our economy is very much dependent on that of mainland China, and it is extremely difficult for a small place like Hong Kong to challenge the Chinese authorities. So there is quite a strong sense of accommodation and compromise on the part of the population in Hong Kong. But however, in the recent years, grievances and dissatisfaction have been accumulating. People certainly have been increasingly dissatisfied with the widening of the gap between the rich and poor, the increasing incidence of corruption, the strengthening of the perception that there is a lot more collusion between big businesses and the government and so on. So people believe that democracy should be part of the solution to all these serious problems.
LNL on RN, and my guests are Joseph Cheng in Hong Kong and John Lee here in Australia. John, would you be kind enough to explain to me this three candidates business and the vote by 1,200 officials? What's all that about?
Right. This really is a point of contention. I mean, as mentioned, every Hong Kong adult will get to vote in 2017, so one person, one vote. Now, so far, so good. The problem is that the candidates will be chosen by a 1,200-member committee. There'll be no more than two or three candidates. The 1,200-member committee are stacked with pro-Beijing loyalists. And to even be able to run as a candidate, you need to have a majority of that 1,200-member committee nominate you. That means that the pro-democracy activists who constitute around one-third of that 1,200-member will have no candidates. So it's a classic thing that you don't rig the election at the time of the voting, you rig the election prior to that in determining the candidates.
So in a sense, China has broken the spirit but not the letter of the law.
That's correct. I think China has been quite clever. What they've done is that through whether it be economic seduction or in some cases coercion, over a period of quite a number of years, they have installed their people or people loyal to their interests in the various Hong Kong bodies. So China can now say that we'll proceed according to the letter of the law, but as I mentioned at the beginning of the interview, you won't get democracy because you won't actually get to vote for the candidates you want to vote for.
Is there any international pressure available, John? Do the British have the slightest influence?
No, there is no direct international pressure available. Hong Kong is a special administrative region of China, so it's under jurisdiction of China. The only light I can see at the end of the tunnel for Hong Kong is that the other country under this one country, two systems title is, of course, Taiwan. Now, what the Taiwanese fear most of all is to lose their way of life. And I think an argument could be made by both people in Hong Kong and around the world that if China proceeds to treat Hong Kong this way, this will decrease the incentive for Taiwanese to eventually integrate back into the mainland. And of course, that is ultimately China's highest foreign policy priority.
Joseph Cheng, we're having this discussion at a time when, you know, when Beijing's under new management, when there seems to be a new spirit about the place, where certainly the projections internationally show at least subtle changes. Are you feeling any of this coming through in the Hong Kong negotiations?
Well, unfortunately, it seems that the new leadership in Beijing is not interested in democracy at all. There are a number of factors which probably go against granting genuine democracy to Hong Kong. In the first place, Xi Jinping has actually been trying to concentrate power in his hands, so much so that he will be in a position to combat corruption more effectively and to introduce economic reforms more efficiently. He has no serious political reforms in mind in his domestic agenda. And secondly, the situation in Tibet and Xinjiang is not developing in favor of the Chinese leadership, in the sense that the difficulties, the problems of the ethnic minorities concerned have been deteriorating. So, and for all these reasons, it seems that the Chinese authorities have in fact tightening the political scene even in China. Suppression of human rights lawyers, of NGOs, and even monitoring of the internet and so on have all been tightening in the past 3-4 years. So one has to admit that the general atmosphere in China is not favorable to granting democracy to Hong Kong.
John, do you agree with that? I would have thought there have been some signs of moderation from Beijing.
I do agree with Joseph, actually. The signs of moderation are in non-political matters. So in China, for example, you can, you know, watch most movies that you want as long as no political implications. You can generally do what you want as long as there are no political implications. But when it comes to political power, China has gone backwards. Xi Jinping has certainly centralized power in himself, but China as a country, the role of the Chinese Communist Party, the political role has actually been strengthened, not weakened, despite these 30, 40 years of economic growth.
How important, John, is Hong Kong to China?
It's important for a number of demonstration reasons. First of all, Hong Kong's a special administrative region. Now, the two other SARs are Tibet and Xinjiang. If you were to have...
Well, Tibet's not a roaring success, is it?
No, well, that's the point. If you were to have this thriving, autonomous democracy in Hong Kong, the two other SARs, Tibet and Xinjiang, would want to ask for the same thing. There's another more external reason, and that is that China has spent the last 10-15 years trying to convince the region and the world that liberal democracy is fundamentally unsuited to Asian Confucian cultures. Now, if you have a thriving liberal democracy in Hong Kong, if you have one in Taiwan, which you already do, you're starting to get one in Singapore, that argument holds less and less weight. So there is a thematic grand narrative at play here, or a contest of the grand narrative at play, and China's very well aware of that.
Joseph, I understand that you've experienced personal intimidation because of your efforts.
Yes, unfortunately, there has been a bit of white terror in Hong Kong in the recent 3-4 months, and various pro-democracy activists have come under pressure. Perhaps I have been selected as a kind of negative example, in the sense that pressure on me may induce self-censorship on the part of other academics and so on. And we are a bit concerned in this way, because under such circumstances, we are not only fighting for a genuinely democratic political system. We are, in fact, fighting to maintain our core values, our lifestyles, and our very dignity as individuals. And we are very concerned that Hong Kong may well be reduced to just another big city in mainland China. We are losing that Hong Kong spirit.
John, let's, as this winds up, let's look at Taiwan. They must be watching to see what integration might look like, you know, because Taiwan may not always have the US looking after them.
Well, Taiwan has been hoping that with economic integration and with mainland Chinese tourists and business people traveling to Taiwan and seeing how free people live. Taiwan have been hoping that this will itself transform China. Now, the problem is that many of the Chinese people might want to live like that, but the Chinese Communist Party doesn't want the country to be like that. So, ultimately that's the problem with authoritarian societies, that the interests of the leaders are often not aligned with the interests of the people. So the Taiwanese are hoping to transform China, but there's very little indication of any political transformation.
A final question to you, Joseph. Would it be Beijing bullying all the way to the ballot box?
I guess so. Beijing really wants to control the elections. Basically, the Chinese authorities cannot countenance a kind of scenario that a candidate whom it does not favor can win. And what we are planning to do is a kind of long-term, peaceful, non-violent political struggle. We try to initiate various types of non-cooperation campaigns to exert pressure on the government and to show that we have not given up. We shall continue to fight for democracy.
And on that optimistic note, I have to say goodbye to you both. Thank you very much, Joseph Cheng, the Chair of Political Science at City University in Hong Kong, and to you, Dr. John Lee, from the Department of Government and International Relations at the University of Sydney. This is LNL on RN, and coming up, Australia's very own Jewish concentration camp.